watch New Survivor. We're stuck in a bad dream. So we're watching an old season with a silly pirate theme. Of course there's a new theme song, but it's as half-assed as our plans. Something, mumbo something, a word that rhymes with plans. John will make some dumb jokes, and he likes to yell and curse. Something about some backup host. How could hell be any worse? We'll spend the whole time wishing that our lives are back on track. But until then, it's Pirate Survivor. We can all be glad for that. It's the Purple Rock Whatever Podcast, arr, mateys.
Hello and welcome to the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast. I'm your host, the guinea pig, or possibly the other guinea pig. With me this week are not guinea pigs, and we're here to talk about Pearl Islands. Hey, boys, did you name the guinea pigs like Rupert and Sandra?
No.
No, okay. How about Colby and Ethan?
No,
okay. Well, then I don't think they're thematically appropriate for what we're doing here today. So how about we say goodnight to the piggies?
Goodnight.
Oh, sure. If you need to tell everybody their names, go ahead.
My guy's name is Onion.
It's an incredible guinea pig name.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Wow. Normally when I have questions for him, he has nothing to say. And then this time, lots to say. But hey, when it's about rodents.
Look, he's rightfully really proud of how good he is at naming pets.
That's right.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. One day he'll be on this show and he will name the tribe. And he'll be really excited about it. And I'll be like, man, I don't care. Because that is something I have never cared about. Even though
it'll
once
be
I did
onion backwards.
So let's just get right into it. We're three episodes into the season, and it's like the same story every week. It's like almost makes me regret doing this week to week, except that I don't want to watch like several hours of the show every week. But like it really would have worked if we talked about like the first three episodes once, because once again, Morgan can't win anything. Drake wins everything, and we get a lot of story about that. So the question I have for you guys is, do we want Morgan to win because we feel bad for them at this point, or is it because we're sick of spending most of the episodes with them?
I think I'd definitely go with the latter, personally. Most of them aren't the most dynamic television. And, you know, yeah, like you've said, we've just really hit a lot of their story beats. So, yeah.
I mean, Matt probably wants him to win because of his eternal love of Savage.
Yes,
right. Obviously. Well, okay. So that is the primary reason. But then there's the reason that there's like no new beats to their story. Their story is just the same thing over and over again at this point. Now in these situations, you always think, well, at some point we'll get some new beats. At some point they'll have to vote someone out who's not in the in group. But they already kind of indicated who the next person would be if they did get to that point next week. So it wouldn't even be that interesting. And they would be saying the same things to Jeff. They'd be saying how, you know, they think they are a strong tribe and they're just, you know, they're right there and they're going to turn it around any moment. So, you know, I just want a different story. So,
yeah, like the little ones that were holding rodents in front of your face not too long ago, like, they were like, why do we keep seeing them all the time? Like, just right now, it's like, it's because they keep losing. We have to tell the story of the losers. And it's like, And when he was saying that, I was like, nailed it, buddy. Like, you just gotta, like, that's where I'm at too. And I think part of it is, like, we've had many times disaster tribes on Survivor, right?
Yeah.
And they tend to dominate the early stuff because that's just the storytelling of Survivor. But they're usually interesting. And Morgan might be, and this is a question for you guys, are they the most boring, like, terrible tribe in Survivor history?
Well, okay. Okay, go.
I was going to say, I think there's at least one tribe that is more boring. One disaster tribe, I should say, that's more boring. And that would be because the dominant tribe was actually a disaster, and these people were, but they won. And these people were just dull, and they lost. Yes, I am. I'm talking about Lamina, which you know, Terry Dietz is really in the kind of Andrew Savage mold. So it's really fitting. It's bizarrely fitting. And those two got, like, it's not like Rhino and Austin are, like, super compelling, but they've got more than other Austin and I want to say Nick.
Astronaut Dan, I think you forgot.
Also Astronaut Dan. I'll give it, you know, there is Astronaut Dan.
I will say the one thing Misty I remember about the one thing I remember about the Lamina tribe was that, and I don't know why I'm remembering this all of a sudden, but I remember the women on that tribe were very attractive. So not that the women on this tribe.
I don't know why you'd remember that either.
Not that the women on this tribe are not attractive. For some reason, I just remembered that about them. But no, that was a very boring tribe. Yeah. I think the thing about this tribe is there's a lot of people who are just not giving us anything. And then the people who are giving us something is not interesting something. So like Austin's given us a lot, but it's just who cares at this point?
A lot of incompetence.
Yeah.
Well, and it's the same thing every week, right? It's the point where, we're going to have a segment about it because, Austin is easily the most dynamic member of that tribe, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just due to, like, just constant failure. You know, the next would be Savage, but he is very, he's trying to, frankly.
Savage is also the narrator over there, which is like,
And if you're not on that vibe, which I find so far I'm not as much as I have in the past, that becomes a problem as well. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like as we said last week, as much of his arrogant douchery is just really shining through, there's also times in the episode it's like, he's not wrong. Like these people suck. He is so much better than everybody else he's around.
Yeah. It's funny when I just skip ahead a bit when, there was the steal of something reward and Krista came over to the tribe. Someone asked her like, who's your leader? And she's like, we don't really have a leader. And Savage's reaction, like really everyone's reaction was like, what? Wait,
that
really?
Was
it's like they didn't believe her. They definitely didn't believe her.
How are you beating us without a leader? It's clearly the most important thing. And, you bring up Lamina as like the counterpart. And I think that's a good example and kind of relating to what Matt was saying at the beginning. The reason why this is not very interesting is like they've all fallen in line. It's a top down thing from Savage down and they have their pecking order and everybody, that's in the pecking order, like the top of it feels comfortable and good. Yeah. And the other people don't. And there's like, that's it. There's no movement. It's very hierarchical stuff to the point where like there's very little drama going on.
Yeah. And the thing about it that is, at least like a little potentially interesting, but not really, is the kind of contradiction between how they act and how they perceive their acting. Like one thing they kept talking about this episode, like, and Rhino brought it up, was that they're like not acting as one, like they're not acting together, but like you said, they're actually like very hierarchical. They do follow their leader. So like that is not their problem at challenges. Like that might be their problem at like beach life. The fact that like they all want to go do their own thing. And we'll like talk about that later too, I'm sure. But there's like this inherent contradiction in kind of how they see themselves and how they see their problems. And yet like how they're also acting that is, I'm not sure that it actually matches very well.
Yeah. And it's like, you could then point to like, this is why you shouldn't like just follow the middle-aged white guy because, it's not successful, except that, when he comes back in another season, it actually is really successful. And it's kind of the same deal. Now they're the more successful tribe, but they're the less interesting one because everything is just, calm and everybody has their job. Whereas the other ones are, pecking at each other. So I think it's like a bad combination of the tribe that maybe seemingly like has their stuff together, but doesn't win.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like, I think this tribe, like, I don't think it has a lot of the internal drama, character drama that frankly, the other tribe has more of, but they're just not winning. So it doesn't matter because guess what? You still have like, like the friction of you're not winning and that's causing you problems.
You can be as calm as you want to be, but you still don't have Rupert.
And that was the difference today. They didn't have Rupert.
Yeah, because, you know, Austin, I mean, we've ragged on Austin deservedly quite a bit so far this season. And while he didn't, you know, win in this challenge and, you know, was really kind of in the hero role, like, it's not like he did badly, you know?
I think he did quite well, in fact.
Yeah. I can't fucking do that. I'll tell you that.
I mean, you know what job you'd have in this challenge.
Right.
I watch challenges like this and be like, that's me. That's my time to shine.
Yeah. When we were watching, you know, I even said, I was like, see, this is my role.
Yeah.
I can even deal with, like, the pain decently well, I think.
Yeah.
But, yeah, just, you know, and I mean, it's like Savage said, you know, at the end of like that, you know, some of the other challenges, they could kind of, you know, overthink stuff and think, oh, we could have done this or we should have done that. And this one, they're just like, look, we threw it all out there. I don't know.
Yeah, Rupert was a little stronger and probably better fed. And that's a big part of it, right? Right. You know what? We're dancing around it. Let's get to our weekly segment now, since it seems to be, you know, tapped into this conversation. That will be, we seem to talk about it every week. So now I just want to formalize it for as long as he is in the game. Did Austin suck this week? Because I think it's an interesting question. Because on the one hand, yeah, I don't think you can pin anything about the immunity challenge on him. He really gave his all, and then at the end, he just didn't have enough. But he did for like 2 hours, so that's a lot. But that's not the whole episode. So, Emma, did Austin suck this week?
You know, not only did he do all right in the challenge, all things considered, we didn't really hear him, you know, outside of maybe returning from tribal council when it would still be like fresh, you know, didn't hear him talk about quitting that much. You know, he certainly didn't bring it up when they were doing the vote. It was fully between Dara or Lil. He wasn't asking anyone to vote him out.
Yeah.
Obviously he's going to continue to have ill fitting boxers, but you know, that's a sunk cost fallacy sort of thing. I don't think we can keep blaming him for that. So, I'm gonna go ahead and say that Austin didn't suck today. I think this might have been his best episode so far.
I agree that it was his best episode. It might not be the necessarily
might not be
answer.
Enough to push him over
Matt,
the edge.
What's your answer?
So I was gonna say it is definitely his best episode, but he did still suck a little bit. Now again, not as much as the previous weeks, but if you remember the reward challenge.
I don't.
Okay. Well, it was the like sink the other vote thing.
Oh, and that's true.
He moved
did
his vote away from everyone else, and then and then waited for Savage's boat to sink, then came back, stood in his boat, sinking it basically by himself, and then they didn't really have to do anything to finish them off. So
yeah, you know, when he first moved away, I was thinking maybe that, you know, just hope that the others take on enough water, you know, by dealing with the other one. But then he got back in there. So it didn't...
Yeah. And he got back in there in a way that sunk his own boat. So that was.
Yeah, this wasn't great.
No, and Probst called it out. Oh my God. You're standing in a boat and you're heavy. This isn't that complicated. You should be clinging onto this because you can't swim. Yeah. Right. So it is a tough call because, yeah, he really sucked in the reward challenge. As much as, yeah, Savage is like, there wasn't anything we could do. It's like, yeah, in that one. But in the reward challenge, it was a perfect example of how crappy you guys are and how you've been losing these things on your own. So it's like the balance, because yeah, he wasn't as whiny at camp. I'm gonna go that yes, Austin sucked this week.
Yeah,
but it was his best week so far. So maybe he's on the upswing.
Going back to the reward challenge, though, there was a great moment where Austin's boat starts moving away, and Savage like yells out something like, "Austin, come back!" just a classic example of just, you know, them just. Like, they don't have any strategy in the immunity challenges, which
is
actually
funny,
these challenges
have,
actually matters.
And
or having reward in this case, but yeah.
It's funny since they, you know, are the one with a leader.
That's right.
I know. And he's the one that should be providing that.
Yeah, there's been no real strategy. And Drake, I mean, they've been crushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So imagine if Drake had been voting each other out the past three. Would there be more bickering, or would it basically be the same as what we already saw? Like, they are the ones that like are just dominating, life is good, and yet still in the briefest of moments are the ones that are just picking at each other. Obviously the main one we're going to get into in the spoiler section more, but even like when they're going around looking for like the treasure chest, half of them like, that's dumb, why are you? They're not going to bury it in the sand like Rupert was saying. Like, imagine if they were also voting each other out, this part of the season would be so much better.
Yeah.
It's true.
I do wonder. I mean, I think it would probably depend on who they were voting out. You know?
Yes, it could.
Certainly yeah, two could of the instigators, really two of the people who are fighting the most are both of the physically weaker members of their tribe. So that might just, you know, it could just be like Rupert chilling with Michelle and Krista. You know, so and that Michelle, what a would have said. Shout out to Sharkules.
Yeah, no, clearly she's the winner of the season. If you look, you can tell.
You just got to read the edit.
There's yeah. quite a social game going there, and the casual fan just wouldn't understand. Yeah, it's just like they already like we get the tiniest of snippets of them, and immediately, and maybe some of this is rewatch, you know, us knowing what to look for, but I don't think so. Like, I think it's pretty clear that the more dynamic scenes are with Drake. You know, last week was even just like, you know, Rupert and the spear. Like, they get more out of Rupert finding a spearhead than we get at all from Morgan.
Yeah.
And Morgan also lost fishing equipment.
Yeah! Yeah, we have a perfect comparison. When one tribe loses fishing equipment to the other, you know, when Drake does it, it gives us different things to talk about. And it really reveals stuff about Rupert. When Morgan does it, it's just more of this top-down stuff. And, like, the thing I want to clarify when we were talking about, like, their top-down management and how it really, you know, has been eliminating drama. It's not because everybody's getting along. It's just because the people on top have effectively ostracized the people who are not.
Yes. Yeah. And then you feel like you have to do things that maybe you're not comfortable with or stay silent if you're in that top when maybe you shouldn't, which then just eliminates drama. So you know, like the one time someone that was briefly in an in-group tried to come, you know, try to talk to the outside group, that was Nicole, and she was then immediately voted out for doing that. So they sent the message right there, don't go against the family. You know, it's very like mafia rules.
Yeah. So, because, yeah, everybody just piles on Lil, and I gotta ask, and I'm not a fisherman. I don't know all the rules, but, and I can understand why you'd want a second person for some elements, hook the fish and all that. But then they're like, this is why you shouldn't go, because you'd lose a hook. Is it that a two-person job? Like, what's the second person about to do to prevent a hook from being, like, eaten by a fish?
All I could think of, and, you know, I haven't fished in, like, 2 decades, and, you know, it would have been with a real rod, is that, you know, another person could double check the knot, but like one person
that's
can
all
do
I
that.
Get to give
too. Yeah, like I can understand faulting her for, you know, not having the proper knot, as
right.
Savage was suggesting. I would say he was not accurate in that that's the only way that people can lose the lines. I feel like even seasoned fishermen sometimes lose a hook to a fish. I think it's a thing that happens. But I don't think that's why they wanted the second person there. I don't know, like when they were like, this is why you need two. It's like, that's not why you need two. There might be other reasons why you need two, but her losing the hook had nothing to do with that.
Well, and it did seem that like, so Rhino was very concerned about, you know, this is why I would have gone with you had you just waited. You know, this is why you needed a second person. He was very much on that. And Savage was very much on the like, I don't understand how that happened to her. This is like what she's supposed to be good at. Like, you know, this is, she says she knows all the knots, and yet this happened. Which, like, I understand a little bit more, especially because they probably don't have a lot of hooks. In fact, I think she said that they don't have a lot of hooks anymore.
I believe that was their last hook.
I believe so, too.
So you can see why they'd be upset.
I am kind of curious who lost the other ones, but...
Maybe that's when they instituted the two-person rule, you know, a QA person because of all those other hooks were missing.
It also sounds like they only had three, and I assume they bought the hooks at the market, so there's another example of them being shitty at buying stuff.
That's right. Yep. How many Austin Taylor articles of clothes do you think they got for those?
I think that took both issues, honestly. Yeah.
Well, I mean, then it had to go to two different people.
Yeah, he bought one hook with one shoe, but then
he got the deal later where he got two hooks at the other. Yeah.
Here's the other thing. Do we believe they've caught a single fish yet? Do you believe that anybody in the history of Survivor has ever caught fish with like a hook? Actually, in I just watched Australian Outback, and I think that it did happen.
Yeah, there, in the history.
There's a lot of Survivor.
Yeah. And I believe that, like, maybe they've caught, like, some, like, really wimpy fish that, frankly, you wouldn't actually eat normally.
But, like, hook fishing never seems to be, you know, the effective method of
right, you really need to stab them.
Yeah. So, I mean, ultimately what's happening there is that they don't like Lil, and they she becomes a convenient target to blame for their failure.
Yeah.
Always a lovely dynamic. It's always great in all social situations. And only ever heightened in a situation where you actually get to blame people and for your failures and, you know, do that. Another example of Survivor bringing out the best people. But they still, when it comes time to make a decision, admit that she's doing more around camp, like that she's useful. What do you think? Do you think they should have kept Lil over Dara? Or do you think they made the right call? Obviously, we know what happens later, but we're not talking about that yet.
I think, normally I say it's less, you know, it's less about keeping the tribe strong and more about kind of like keeping a cohesive group in case, you know, like a swap or a merge happens. You want everyone that you're with to be voting with you. And if there's someone that you think might not be, then you want to get rid of them. And in this case, while I think there were maybe like one person on that tribe that might have preferred Lil to Dara, I think most of them vastly preferred Dara. So I don't think it was a hard decision for them.
Yeah, you know, if they're and at this point in the season, you know, in this point of the series, there have been tribe swaps, so they are aware, you know, that could be something that happens, and yep. Lil wouldn't stay with them. I wouldn't think, like, because she doesn't, they voted out Ryan, like, or it would depend on obviously who she swapped with. If she swapped with Andrew, maybe, but like, if she swapped with Austin.
Yeah, because he's the only one who had any relationship with her, I think.
Right.
At least that's what we saw, you know, it's not necessarily hard to imagine that maybe Tawana's like talked to her some, but.
Right.
Really nobody
and
else.
There's, you know, the, there could be the sense.
Probably closer with Dara. I think we've seen her talking with Dara a lot more, yeah.
Sure, but in terms of like, mysteriously if they were swapped, you know, who, but, and there could be the sense of like, oh, I would be, you know, it's not honorable or whatever, cause I'm a Boy Scout, but,
right.
But, you know, you could certainly see at the very least them thinking, why would Lil stay with us? And, you know, if it's really, and since that loyalty factor that you're, you know, talking about, Matt, play here, it's really like, doing stuff at camp or being marginally better in challenges, and like the camp shit's just not that important.
Yeah.
No. Any. I mean, yes. Lil is the bigger flight risk. This was a no-brainer decision. Dara, even if she isn't, you know, completely within the core alliance, you know, clearly she is the next to go. Should they lose again, and remain intact, not swap. She's not a mobile figure. She doesn't seem to be, you know, somebody who would do a lot to upset the apple cart. She would just quickly.
Frankly, I was a little surprised to hear that Dara isn't, you know, wasn't a part of that like core alliance. Just because.
I mean, I think the thing is, she is. I just think she's at the. She's just at she's the just bottom at the of bottom. That five.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they have to present a second option.
Right.
Honestly, a bigger question is whenever they do this, you know, oh, this person or that person, but this person is really good around camp. Do we feel like that's ever really worked out? Like, again, as Emily said, there's a lot of Survivor. So maybe once, but almost always, if they're like, oh, but they're really useful around camp, that person's gone, right?
They would have to be incredibly useful, I feel like. Like, you'd have to be a, you know, a Rupert or an Ozzy or something like that.
I was going
to
say, I'm pretty sure Ozzy survived a few votes past his expiration date just because they're like, I want to keep eating. Like, you know.
I'm not sure that's true, actually. I feel like whenever there's been an opportunity to get rid of an Ozzy, like in the individual part of the game, I think he's gone, right? Like,
well, but that's the thing. I don't think keeping people around because they're good at camp exists after the merge. I think at that point they care, but I think it exists in the pre-merge. And
well, I'd say the pre-merge is probably more likely. We want to keep Ozzy because we don't want to lose challenges, or that he was in an actual, you know, alliance in some cases. Or that they did not lose challenges. Although,
or the one time was, you know, a sacrificial Ozzy.
Yes. So yeah, I just like, again, maybe early on, or if it's like you really like to, and the other person sucks as well, maybe that does help. And I'm not saying like, I bet like in the consideration, there's been like, you know, you keep people because they're more useful, or even just like you don't even bring them up because they're useful. Like, I'm not saying like people that are useful around camp have never like benefited from it. I'm just saying like when the show starts like creating that thing, like this person who seems like the person that's going to go, and people start saying, ah, oh, but they're really useful around camp, I feel like they're just being nice. And what they're really doing, like, I don't think there was ever really any question amongst anybody there that it was going to be Lil. Other than maybe Andrew was thinking to not do it.
Right. I was going to say either they're just being nice, or, you know, the person who's saying it disagrees with the person who's pitching that person. Right. I think, yeah, that's Andrew right. A little bit. Maybe would have preferred to keep Lil over Dara or something.
Yeah. So then they're trying to find like a reason that doesn't like belie that, like, I don't want to get rid of them because they're my ally, or strategically this harms me. So it's like, oh, yeah, that's really useful to have this. But yeah, I feel like that, you know, if you hear that, it's probably coded that person's, you know, a goner. The other person in this decision is Dara. And my God, what a dynamic television character this person is. I think this is really the first we've gotten anything of her this season. And it really led me to the question, which may have a really simple answer. We'll see where you guys go on this. And we'll go start with Matt. Why do you think Dara was cast on a television show?
She's a young, attractive woman.
So that would be the obvious one. I think there might be a little something more to it, but what do you concur?
I think that's the main reason. I think but obviously there are many young, attractive women out there applying for reality shows or being recruited. I think what makes them think she would have been slightly more interesting, A, she's got a very thick accent. B, she's a mortician.
That's the one. That's what I think it is.
That's, yeah.
Hot mortician.
Absolutely, she is a pretty girl, right? And I think, yes, just standard issue. I think she's attractive. This is when the show was still really popular. Like, I don't think they were hurting to find attractive young women to be on the show. And so she's just so dull that it's like, I think for sure when they're like, this pretty girl, like, that's why she gets an interview, right? They see the headshot, like, or whatever.
Mortician.
That's why they bring her in. But like, I think they just fell in love with the idea that we're going to have a sexy mortician.
Yeah, they thought she'd be like talking about like dead bodies all the time or something like that. And it would be like at least interesting. And nope. When she spoke at the end of this episode, I was like, whoa, wait, what? She's speaking here? Oh my God.
And it's just such a the accent is fine, you know, the show has always had wonderful accents and all that. It's just a complete flat affect that she could just not be less interested in any of the proceedings. When she's up there suffering, you know, like in the reward challenge, she's still just like, yeah, it all hurts. It's just like, I remember sexy mortician, right? Like, I think that the hook I get, like, I remember who Dara is. I remember her being attractive. I don't remember her being this boring. And now, like, you know, no spoilers. Like, I legit don't remember. So maybe she does later pick up. But for now, it's just like, wow. Like, even for old Survivor, she is really standing out as one of the least charismatic people I've ever, like, I've seen on the show from, like, the past three old season I've been seeing.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's one of the big problems with this tribe. So you have Dara, who's given you nothing. And I mean, like, not even, like, she's, like, she's not interested. I mean, like, she's just giving you nothing.
Sounds like she's not even giving Tuana anything.
Well, that's what I mean. But, like,
the tribe themselves admit that, like, she's not doing anything.
Right.
Yeah.
But let's be honest. Like, Rhino is giving almost as little. Like, today, when he spoke about Lil losing the fishing hook, was, like, the most he had spoken, in all the episodes thus far. All he's pretty much said is, we don't like work together. People go their own way. Like, I feel like that's all he said for three episodes.
Yeah. Which is great because, of course, our introduction to Rhino is him going his own way.
I know.
Buying stuff.
So then,
it's bad.
Right. Tawana gave us a couple, like, you know, like, in my opinion, like, interesting moments in the premiere. But she's kind of faded into the background.
Well, she had her stuff with Austin last week, so there's
right,
that.
Yeah. So, and then like Lil, like most of what she gives you is kind of like the Boy Scout stuff and being the outsider and that. But you know, that's something at least. So, yeah. I mean, like to me, like the three most interesting people on this tribe were like Lil, Austin, and Andrew. And Andrew's not even that interesting. He's just like the like, God, my people suck. I'm really trying to do better here.
Also, I mean, it must be said, that's one handsome motherfucker. Like, now that he's got like the stubble and stuff now.
Mother, may I?
Yeah, it's for real. Like, you know, like obviously he was handsome to the premiere, but I think he's already hit like his peak island hotness.
This was I think the episode where I had to be like, look, watching it. Yeah. And actually also on that sort of Survivor crush range and on Dara not being that interesting in the premiere, my husband, will call Mr. Emma, was like, someone's a mortician? Like, that was the first thing he noticed. And then this week he's kind of like, I guess Dara's cute. You know.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, she's just like, I bet in like, you know, in the pictures or maybe your videos, like, oh yeah, no, that's an attractive girl. Let's throw on. And then, yeah, just like, oh man, our audience is just, their minds are going to be blown by the, you know, the combination of, you know, pretty young woman who works with the dead. It's going to be amazing. You know?
Yeah.
Like, she's not even goth.
No, she's just.
That's actually like the really funny part about it. Like, if she was goth, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, she's creepy, like, you know?
Like, Southern Belle, you know, she's got this real thick accent, and she works with dead people, and, you know, that's all right.
Yeah, she seems like somebody who doesn't have to talk a lot during her day job. You know, it takes one to know one. But it's just like, hey, we're doing our job. It's
no
just,
one's going to believe you.
Black hole of nothing. And like for me, like, I think there's Tawana is somebody I'm willing to bet is more dynamic than what we've gotten. Like, she's somebody, yes, I can point to and be like, I bet we're not getting enough from her because the edit isn't giving it, because they're, you know, in love with, you know, Savage and the Austin storyline that keep feeding, yeah, and then like the people getting voted out. But yeah, I don't feel like that's the way with Dara. If Dara ends up barely being on the rest of the season for however long she's on, from what I've seen so far, that's cool. I'm fine. Like, she says she does really well in challenges, and I'm like, I mean, you stood there, like, you sat there. Maybe she's done it right in other things. I have no recollection of it, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
It was very funny to me that multiple people, like, not just Dara, but other people spoke about her ability in that challenge to, like, sit there. And, like, yeah, I know that it was painful. I get that, the way they talked about it. But it also was like, everyone's like, well, neither of them quit. And it's like, to quit in that, it's not like holding the rope where you like slip and like, oh, I slipped. You would have to actively say, let me down. Right. I can't do it anymore. And they could have just not listened. Like,
that would actually have been really amusing.
You sit there and be quiet, ballast. We got a challenge to win.
Like, I... Also, why did they have to, like, I mean, I guess it's just sort of the nature of harnesses and, like, gravity and shit, but, like, why did it have to be painful?
I don't know.
Why did it have to be people? I bet Michelle and Dara don't weigh exactly the same, and, like, yeah, they could both pick their smallest person, but it's, like, it's not like that's, like, you know, it's not like there's, like, strategy involved in picking who's... Yeah. Tiny.
And also, like, they gave them time to work out the really difficult strategy of strongest to lightest, you know? I feel like that's something they could have just done on site, but no, that we got the scene at camp of them working out the clue and figuring this all out, which is also really illustrative.
Austin, you're the strongest, right? Yeah.
Man, they had a lot of time to fill an old Survivor. People now mourn, like, oh man, I really miss when they used to read clues. And I'm like, no, I value my time way too much to worry about the time when, like, shitty poets would come together with, like, you know, crappy clues. You can skip ahead to the challenge for me. Save that time for, I don't care, idol hunting, anything. But yeah, just it's very illustrative, as well as this conversation, because really, I have more challenge takes. That's how little was going on this episode.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that immunity challenge, I don't think they would use that as immunity challenge these days, because it's like too solo. I think it is. Yeah. They might use it as a reward challenge, because it like kind of starts
right,
because
they've done sort of the hero thing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I thought the reward challenge was actually a pretty interesting challenge.
It was great.
I don't think they really
that's
like
a really fun challenge.
And there's no reason why they couldn't.
Yeah, they should use that more often.
Like, I do think there's sometimes difficulty of like scheduling water challenges, especially like in Fiji. Sometimes it's upset, but have it there, man. And like you have like a 6 day span of when you could use it. Yeah, like when they first did that, like this is fun. Like and it kind of continue what we were just talking about last week. How they're really getting good mileage out of the pirate theme, almost as much as us.
almost.
So yeah, that was great, and I don't think I've ever seen it again.
Yeah,
no, I mean, like, I actually think like the challenges are really creative this season, and I'm liking them a lot. And it's good because the other interesting parts of this season are starting to taper off, and hopefully it picks up again. In fact, I know it does. But
yeah, everybody else holding that rope was just decorative, right? Like, were they really easing like the weight off of the person? I guess we don't know, but I kind of feel like whenever you're holding that, the person on the back has to. It's not like they just get to take their time and relax.
Yeah,
and it was like they only were in like 5 minute increments.
But how about we make intervals a thing?
Wow. Okay.
Increments
in a week. At least I could like sense something bad was happening. But it's only 5 minute increments, and they held it for 2 hours. Like it was like, so it was like what, 20 minutes of everyone else? Like they could have at least made it like 10, and if one of those people lets go before, then it's like a thing.
I'm guessing clearly they did not believe this was going to be a 2-hour challenge,
right? And we've seen that sort of situation happen before.
Do you notice how, like, even with the argument that we're going to get to in the spoiler section, that Sandra did both challenges?
I didn't until you brought it up.
Yeah, they sat out Burton. Like, is Drake like trying to throw things?
Oh, yeah, I remember. I knew there was something when we were talking about. I thought maybe there was something in the order that was weird. I guess I was a little surprised to see Andrew ahead of Rhino, but I guess Rhino's younger. So, but yeah, they sat out Burton. Like, yeah, and we were definitely like, that's a choice.
Yeah, is this like you being sporting? I don't understand. Maybe because
they sat him out at the immunity challenge.
Yeah.
Which was bizarre. Holding weight.
The weight-bearing immunity challenge. Burton's like, I'm good. We got enough strength, which ultimately proved
which was true.
Not wrong, but like, it's not like it did that. It's not like, oh, now we can definitely use him for a reward. You know, it's like,
because you don't need to match up. You can put like Lil versus Burton if you want to.
Actually, I remember now when we were talking about it, what I did wonder is if it does, I know you said they don't need to match up, but I wonder if it maybe went unsaid that they needed to sit out a man and a woman. And
they did sit out John in the
Johnny
first
Johnny Fairplay already sat out.
Yeah.
And their other men are all very
That's strong. Almost certainly what happened then.
Yeah.
Good work. Good piecing out.
Yeah. Because otherwise, why would you ever?
Otherwise, it makes none sense.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. That has to be what happened. Otherwise, it's like just... Be strong. Be stronger than them. You've earned this right. Go for it. There you go. Because, what needs to be clarified is that the 2 sit-outs in a row rule only applies episodically. It will not carry over to next episode's reward challenge because they're smart enough as a TV show to not assume that people will remember from week to week what's going on. So there we go. I don't think we have anything else to discuss spoiler-free from this episode. Usually, we still end up stretching time, but let's switch it up and not do that. Instead, let's get into this week's UpDog feature, the segment that's setting America on fire. Nope, bad, poor choice of words. Other things are setting America on fire.
The fire?
News from like 2-3 weeks ago. That was like 10 years ago now.
Yeah,
I think the fires are still going.
Oh, sure, but we don't care anymore because we're hoping things happen. Other things,
the sky
lots of prayers.
The sky is more breathable and not orange, so less bad.
There we go. Nothing that could be out in the sky killing you now. Oh wait, that relates. So the question this week is: what pandemic-related change would you like to see stick around? assuming life ever goes back to normal. So, you know, obviously the biggest focus on pandemic things is how much it sucks and how much, you know, it's changed our lives for the worse. But I was wondering if there is anything that, you know, the pandemic has, you know, forced upon us that has changed your lives, society, that you actually wouldn't mind sticking around for a while. Let's start with Emma.
Well, I would say stimulus checks, except they're not really coming. but I'm actually fine, so I shouldn't complain. But just, you know, UBI would be nice for people in this world. I think, you know, kind of a, it's sort of a mixed bag, but I think maybe a general acceptance that, like, working from home is not that big of a deal. You know, I don't think places should necessarily, like, require, you know, or go, because there are, you know, some things and equipment and various things. But generally, especially for, like, parents, of which I am not, just if you need to work from home for a day, I should just be like, okay.
I mean, that was my answer, too.
Yeah, it's almost such the right answer that, like, I should have, like, prefaced besides working from home. But, yeah, no, that's my answer as well. It is – not only have I noticed how much better it is, it's made me, like, wonder, like, legitimately – why do I ever need to be in the office? You know, like, I have my own office. So I should feel good about it, but there is not one element of my job that has been made, like, more difficult by not being in the office.
Oh, there's actually a lot of elements of my job that have been made more difficult by not being in the office.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm sure for a lot of people that's been true. But, like, my job is to create content. So right. Often being in an office amongst people is actually a hindrance by, a significant degree. Like, I need – one of the reasons why often, like, in jobs I've either ended up having, like, my own area, or if there is an office, even if I'm not ranking high enough, is just because there's a recognition that, like, I kind of need some quiet and some thinking time.
Right.
I get all of that now. And, like – I could see when this ends, needing to go in the office a couple times a week. You know, like the weekly meetings I do via Zoom, I would be fine doing in person once breathing isn't poison. But for real, it doesn't make my job better being around people. I rarely ever had those, like, you know, quick face-to-face, you know, discussions, because I don't like talking to my coworkers. I actually prefer getting feedback written. It gives me a paper trail and also something to refer to. Like, if we're working out something, somebody just flying a few ideas by me while I'm trying to work isn't really a thing. Write it down. And now I have something to work from. And also it might force that person to realize they actually think it through before they send. So, yeah, for me, I always knew that I preferred working from home. In other jobs, I'd try to sneak days in here or there. But just the global recognition is like, hey, you know what? This is actually isn't so bad. You know, employees aren't less productive than they used to be. And, anyway, so that's kind of where I'm at, but it helps also that I'm incredibly antisocial. Like, I don't really like my coworkers. So, like, not being able to just socially visit them, I don't dislike them, but sending them an IM is enough communication for me.
I mean, so another answer that I have is, as a lawyer, one thing that was very common beforehand and now is not done at all is handshakes. Lawyers are obsessive about handshakes, to the point where even when the pandemic was starting to hit but offices weren't closed yet, people would still go in for a handshake. And I'm like, no, I'm not shaking hands, Nat. That you guys know there's a virus around. And they're like, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not shaking hands. And now, like, no one's shaking hands. And it is great, because there are those people who, like, use a handshake to establish dominance and to, like, it's like their personality is all about their handshake. And I am cool with that going away forever. So
that does make me think of another one, too. Speaking of hands, is apparently – didn't think this was something that needed a global pandemic to stick around, but washing your hands.
Yeah.
Remember in the early stages, you know, there was a lot of talk that revealed that a lot of people start fucking washing their hands regularly.
Yeah.
And,
or if they do, it's like out.
Right. So, you know, wash your hands.
Yeah. I would like that one to stick around too.
That's I think it was more surprising for her that was an issue, because she hasn't been in a men's room. Because if you have, you know, it's like, yeah. Now, I don't know if the pandemic changed that enough. I certainly not at the beginning, back when I was in men's rooms.
Right.
Like, where are you going? You're not done yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, honestly, even if I'd like use a stall to change, you know, which there had been situations where you have to do, still washing my hands because you're touching stuff. You're touching the doors.
Yeah, or even just performatively, you don't want people to like
To assume.
Like, assume. Like,
no, I'm carrying this bag of
changing in there. No, they're going to assume that you don't wash your hands.
Yeah, it's like, exactly. See, I'm carrying this bag of normal clothes and I'm wearing workout clothes. That's what happened. Yeah.
Totally not being disgusting right now.
Yeah. So kind of, you know, in addition to the remote work and acceptance of that, I think I'm going to continue wearing masks in some situations. Like, now that I'm kind of used to it, it's not that big a deal. Like, why not always wear a mask when you're on a plane? Like, those things are always just disgusting disease boxes.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, I'm obviously not if I'm eating, but maybe just don't eat on the plane. I mean, very few times in the plane can you eat anything but, you know, a snack or a drink anyway. But, like, yeah, I think I'd be, like, more comfortable with it, so, you know. Since I've been doing it, I don't do it as much as other people because, again, I'm remote working and stuff. And then hopefully maybe just as a society, you know, I don't think everybody's going to be doing, of course not, but they won't look at you like the weird person. So. I mean, my society is a little different than your society.
Ooh, my society functions.
I know. We have municipal rules about it.
I mean, that's weird. Actually, we went countries shopping where people wear masks very regularly because of past epidemics, so, you know.
Right. Yeah, no, other parts of the world, it's like, yeah, that's what you do, man, you're sick.
Yeah,
yeah, so, like, those are a couple things that, you know, wouldn't be so bad. And yeah, I like the handshaking one, too. Well, I wonder, actually, like, if kids are going to learn it. You know how, like, you know, we had
no pressure to hug strangers. Manly handshake?
Now yeah, maybe they'll be like, hey, can you mess yourself?
I like hugging people that I hug. Sure. I miss that. But
there are definitely people who are like, hi, I'm a dude that met you at a party today. Now I'm leaving.
Yeah, I don't have that experience. Hi. I wonder why.
Oh, the fun one. And this, I mean, this doesn't really happen anymore because now I'm property. But in college, I remember like blatantly this guy, like I was with two of my guy friends and this other dude's like, oh, hi, like handshake, hug. Just like. I'm right. Come on, man. What yeah. Are we doing?
I say, like, I think it does, like, probably not an issue either pandemic wise for me. Younger, sure. But now I've completely sent a vibe that it's like, your space is there and mine's here. And our relationship to each other is going to leave at a very generic level, but that's yeah, good. That's, I guess another thing the pandemic's like, it's prevented from anybody penetrating the shield. Actually, except for the worst thing is like there are personal details of my life, like decorating my room, and people have seen it over Zoom, and it's like, oh, I worked so hard to not share a single.
That's detail why you got to use the backgrounds.
My work computer doesn't have is too old. To support.
Oh, okay. See, my personal computer that I'm using now is too old. My work computer can do it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, they've just seen like band posters, so I guess shockingly, they're like, "Oh, he's cooler than we thought." I don't know. It's like I don't want you guys to know anything about me. Unfortunately, they know I have kids because the kids want me to decorate my office with some of their drawings. But otherwise, no,
yeah.
No chit chat. First of all,
I don't want that. All right. So yeah, in comments, let us know what, if there's anything, pandemic related, things that brought on that you'd like to see stick around. You know, if it's remote work, just say me too. And why remote work has been great for you. I think that's all we got for the non-spoiler section this week. Somebody let them know where our website is.
I think Emma should.
www.purplerockpodcast.com. Our Twitter handle is @purplerockpod. I'm @purplerockemma.
I'm @purplerockmatt.
I'm purplerockandy. You should subscribe all the various places that people do that. Watch us on YouTube. Like, hit that like button. Hit the bell. No, don't do those. Don't do the bell. Like is cool. And that's all for this week.
I'm too old.
Next week, here's hoping we have something different to talk about. And now, spoilers!
It's the spoiler time. Da, 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 da.
we're about to reveal things that will happen later this season and possibly the franchise of Survivor now. So yeah, the highlight of this episode was Sandra yelling at Fairplay. Absolutely. Why was it so great?
So great.
It's perfect. Just, it's a great quote. It's very handy.
Yeah. I had forgotten.
I definitely was though fully in the like what I could sense it happening and like the.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I forgot. This is mostly an audio podcast. I'm describing looking back with wide eyes and looking back at the screen and being like, "Hey, check that out. It's exciting."
So I had forgotten what set the argument off, and it was really amusing to see them arguing over who's better in challenges of all things, which like. Oh boy, low bar to clear there for both of them.
Sweetie, it's neither.
Yeah, they both stick. They're terrible. But they were both very insistent that I am better than that person, and I am better than that person. And that
why
was
were Michelle's glasses start. And Johnny's socks? Johnny
yeah.
Carry your own glasses, Michelle. What the hell?
Yeah, you just met her, and you're like, I got a special pair of sock like glasses. Like, what the? Yeah, maybe it's true. Maybe it's not.
I understand swimming with glasses would be difficult, but it's like they're going to be wet anyway. Just leave them on at that point, I think.
Yeah, or hold them in your hand. That could be a thing. I don't know. I mean, what do I know about glasses? I lost a pair in the ocean once, actually, of sunglasses.
See, so that's why you got to keep them in your
sock. Right, got to keep them in my sock. But
this
is going to shock you. I also was not wearing socks. So.
In the ocean?
That's your first mistake.
Yeah.
Fucking rookie move. You can tell who grew up inland in the center of his country.
That's right.
I grew up by the beach, too. So I know all about beach socks.
Yeah, no, I also didn't know, like, it was just such, and it's so illustrative of, like, you know, the dynamic between those two, that they will just butt heads over anything, including who sucks marginally less at a thing that they both agree that they suck at.
Yes. Yeah, no, and that's why they're, like, really fun to watch, because they obviously hate each other so much. It is clear as day.
Yeah.
And I also think some of it, you know, Chris does pointed out like, oh, we haven't voted anyone out, so there's a little bit of that tension. But I think some of it is like they haven't voted everyone out, so there's not a clear pecking order yet. So it's like, do you think I might be worth a challenge? It's no, this person's worse than me, and like trying to establish that before they lose, because you know, Palau hasn't existed yet. They have every reason to believe that eventually they might go to tribal council.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, what's beautiful about their pure hatred of each other is, of course, that they will never vote each other out. And it's just like, that's actually a running theme for Sandra, that she will openly butt heads with like the worst person on her season, and neither of them will ever cast a vote for each other. It's it's really something.
It you know, I think it's because they realize quite often, like, I could beat that person at the end. And, like, they both know it the entire time.
And so Sandra realizes it correctly.
Yeah, well, yes. But, yeah, and I think they just sort of like, you know what? I hate this person, but I can beat them. I'm gonna try to take them as far as possible.
So, yeah, I've watched the moment. You know, obviously, as Survivor fans, we've seen it all a lot. But it cuts right to her, you know, yelling the iconic line. I watched it a few times today. I watched it then, trying to get a screenshot, but it's so rapid that like what you see on the post is the best I could do. But really underrated moment, because the scene is usually just starts as soon as Sandra's getting up and yelling, is as he is like starting to yell at her, there's a close up on her face and you can see the moment in her eyes. It's like, oh, this is what's happening. And she is ready. Like she just formulates, oh, it's so it's like that, and she's ready, and it's great. Because, like, he is yelling, absolutely, but he's not really going strong. She overpowered, and it is fantastic.
I mean, honestly, like, his reaction to the entire thing is funny, too. Like, because he's, like, he's kind of, like, you can tell he's kind of winding himself up more than anything. Like, I don't even think that she's doing most of the winding it up of him, as someone who winds himself up from time to time. Like, you can tell he's just, like, working himself into a lather about it. And then when she gets mad, he's like, I don't care. No, I don't care. But I'm still right. I don't care. It is – I enjoyed that part very much.
And then, of course, the other great part of it was, you know, the dueling interviews where we get Sandra calling him an ass who knows nothing. And then even better, Fairplay's just brilliant quote, you know, that $1 million says that she won't be in the final one. Just one of the best winter foreshadowing moments in the history of Survivor. But I wonder, that was not the only foreshadowing moment this episode.
No.
Which was better, that or when Lil's torch would not snuff?
When Lil's torch would not snuff, I went to the Slack meeting. I was like, Lil's torch didn't snuff. I forgot that. That's amazing.
I think, I mean, it's tough because obviously the Johnny Fairplay confessional is much more.
Yeah, iconic, that's the better one, but.
Hence, because we remembered. But I would like to make just sort of perhaps a losing art. The, what's the dissent opinion to say the virtue of Lil's torch not snapping, because at that time, you know, I don't know if EDGIC existed back then. I was 13 and the internet barely existed, but if it did, you know, there, I bet there were even some savvy players who had just noticed other sort of winner confessionals or something who might think like, that's interesting. Whereas the Lil thing, they have no reason to believe the Outcast twist is coming. And something that makes it extra special is that the editors, I mean, obviously they choose to include that, but the editors know what they're doing with the Johnny Fairplay confessional. Lil's torch just didn't snuff. That's nature, baby.
Yeah, it's just a weird coincidence. That would have been shown whether or not, you know, she ever comes back or not, because they show the torch snuffing moment.
Yeah, and she has that line too, special, that like very and, like,
spooky.
Well, and the thing also, is, they actually might not have shown it either, because they might have just cut right to him snuffing.
Well, I think they would have, though, because you just get that, like, such a classic sad Lil line where, like, Jeff's like, oh, looks like the tribe doesn't want you to go, or, like, you know, whatever, and she's just like, yeah, they do. Like, yeah, right.
I think that Jeff would have insisted they do another take and get it right. But I think they left it in because they're like, oh, no, these are coming back. This is great.
Well, they don't know that she's coming back, though. So
that's true.
Doing another
that's
take,
that part.
And they almost certainly did do it. And then the editors chose one. So that's possible. But yeah, it's just like it's so organic a moment. Whereas, yeah, like your winner's moments, like, you know, obviously Fairplay being the one to say it makes it a lot different. And again, another parallel to her next, you know, season when she, the person. But like, yeah, the other ones where it's like, oh man, that person had such a great winner's quote. Like every goddamn player on there
right. Says
and something also about them winning. And then we just get to see the ones that either do or really don't.
Frankly, who knows how many other people Johnny Fairplay was like, they're not going to win.
Yeah, especially a guy like him who was very interested in trying to cut wrestling promos here or there. So.
Right. What I do wonder, actually, is because he not just saying, you know, and I've got $1 million, she won't be the final one. Before that, he says, you know, oh, she's not the final four. So who at this point does Johnny Fairplay think is the final four? Is it just him, Burton, Sean, and Michelle?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
Yeah, that's
what a terrible final four.
Yeah. There is one other spoiler.
I think we know who wins though in that group of four.
Yeah. It's not John.
It's not John. It's not Burton. It's not Sean. It's gotta be Michelle.
It's gotta be. The edit is screaming that.
Yeah. A Michelle who's siding with some odious men.
I've never heard of that in my life. There was one other kind of spoilery moment. We forgot to include it in the breakdown, but I wanted to bring it up, which is, so Lil talks about, you know, Andrew never came back and talked to me, which, you know, we see in the episode. He says, I promised, you know, that I'll tell you whether or not. And then we don't see him do that. And first of all, just like whether or not you should or should not, like at this point, there's not really a lot of harm in telling someone that, but also there's not a lot of harm in not telling them that, because again, if you're voted off pre-merge, you don't come back. Like it's just take your sour grapes and go. But also when we did our second chance interview with him, he was like, I told her, I have no idea what she was talking about. I went up to her and I told her, I'm sorry, it is you tonight. So I don't know where she got that from. But that's what sinks him. She comes back and that's the grudge she holds. And that is why he goes.
Well, I mean, that's the storyline reason.
That's the story.
As when we get to it, he continued to be a dick to her in part because he didn't realize he couldn't vote her out. Revealed this as well in your interview that like when like it happened and all of a sudden there were people out, like he was so pissed and like just downtrodden that he wasn't listening to the instructions that Jeff was going. So like he for like when they go back and they know they have to vote somebody out, just thought, well, I don't care. I'm just going to vote her out again. Like he didn't know he couldn't. So he treated her like crap throughout, like as opposed to you see how everybody treated Burton. They're like, hey, you're a buddy now.
Yeah.
Well, we never would have thrown a challenge to get rid of you. That's friend.
Spoiler.
We're in the spoiler section.
I know, I'm joking.
Spoil it all.
But yeah, no, it is. I did just want to bring that up because that was a moment that John reminded me happened in the interview we did with him. That was like, yeah, I actually do kind of think that he probably would have gone back and told her in this instance.
Yeah,
I reminded you, but reviews
have
fine.
To be taken with a grain of salt. People, you know, say that, but yeah, you know, there's also the question of like, how much motivation does he have to lie to our dipshit little podcast?
Right, like he could just be like, yeah, I mean, I didn't think she was going to come back, and who knows if you know they had pulled something. So
right, exactly. Like anyone,
I don't think that many people would have been like. Dare you?
I'm not voting for you now.
You did.
That's why he was on the podcast. It was on the lead up to Second Chances.
Yeah.
Remember when we did interviews? What a waste of energy and time that was.
At least the Second Chances ones were like, you know.
They were different because it wasn't like, hey, you know, recap this past season for the 15th time because you've done this on every other outlet. Yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be interesting to see. I mean, for the story will always be that he didn't, and that's her justification.
Yep.
She wasn't listening to him, just like he wasn't listening to Prost.
Honestly, I believe that totally.
They're about ready to go.
Something that wasn't as weird as you thought it was. Like,
Right, maybe it's like, you know, hey. Sorry, we are like all talking all over each other. I am sorry to the listeners. But you're saying, you know, that maybe she wasn't, he didn't say it as clearly or something, and she didn't pick up. Like, yeah, I could totally see it being like, hey, you know, I tried my best.
Right. And like, yeah,
that's supposed to lie.
I'm safe. He tried his best.
Exactly.
Right. And didn't finish that thought because in his head, he knows what that meant.
Right.
That when somebody on Morgan tries their best, they did not succeed in what they were going.
Right. Yeah, when you try your best, that means you lose. Come on.
I was actually thinking that maybe I should re-listen to your interview for this podcast, discussing this season. The big drawback I have is that I'm not in it, so we'll see if that ever goes.
I mean, I don't want to listen to it, and I am in it, so, you know, you got that.
That makes me less likely to listen to something. I don't want to hear my voice, and I'm sorry, frankly, that all of you have to hear my voice. It's not a great one.
Well, then in that case, Emma could listen to it, since I don't want to listen to myself. Andy doesn't want to listen to not himself. And
I mean, ultimately, that's why...
You're already the one who told you that that happened.
I need to let the other person talk more. Like, they're the star of this episode, and that doesn't sit right with me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a guy who watches TV.
You're all the right, more, Andy.
I got nothing else for this week. You guys?
That's it. No.
Nope.
Hit the theme music.